10, 15.
Back upfield to the 35, to the 40, 45, 50.
Pass the 50.
35, 40.
Pass the 30.
To the 20.
Inside the 20.
You got to be kidding me.
To the 10.
Whoa! He scores!
He's all the way home.
The no flags!
Oh, my God. Holy moly.
They're not going to keep him off the field tonight.
One of the greatest upsets in sports history.
Hello again, everyone. This is the Old College Try. This is your host, Tim Hyland, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Mike Unger. Mike, as listeners know, the weekend before last, we had a very busy weekend in Utah. My question for you was, how was your weekend in Baltimore of doing nothing?
Oh, my God, it was glorious, Tim. I barely set foot outside my... Well, I set up my foot outside on Saturday, but not outside the massive premises of my property, which of course is about 0.1 acre, because it was a beautiful Saturday. And I was outside smoking some pork shoulder and smoked some cigars later at night, went up on the roof. But basically, I watched 12 hours of college football. It was glorious.
That's a nice day, right?
Oh, it was such a beautiful, like 65 degree fall Saturday as well. Had some friends come over with some of their little ones or a couple six-year-olds running around crazy all day. So it was a great day.
It isn't like smoking the pork butt thing. It's like, I think people don't know like how easy it is to smoke a pork butt. They're so impressed by your work, and there's no work involved really.
the only work involved is cleaning the damn smoker out the next day. But yeah. In terms of cooking the meat, yeah, you basically brine it season it the night before, let it sit for overnight. Throw it on there, and then you literally never touch it. In fact, you shouldn't even open the lid to the smoker.
So did you do fat side up or down, Mike?
I went up, I believe.
I think up makes more sense because the fat drips down over the rest of the meat, right?
Yeah, whichever way I did it, it turned out perfectly. I had a little leftover for lunch today too, which was a nice little treat.
Ooh, on a Wednesday, right? Huh? Wow.
What'd you do?
Very, very aggressive, aggressive Wednesday lunch. I had a lot of soccer because Lee got asked to be a guest player for a team. But it was a beautiful weekend and otherwise pretty low stress. The week at work has been very high stress, Mike. So
you work in a high stress job.
Well, one of these weeks where it's like, how is it only Wednesday at this point? It feels like it's Friday, but it's
I have
not.
a lot of weeks like that.
anyway, so it sounds like you had a great weekend. I did as well. We are now in like the sweet spot for weather, right? This is classic fall weather territory now.
Sweet spot for the weather and sweet spot for the season, really. October is where things get real serious.
And we have baseball, playoff baseball as well, which is always a lot of fun, except for if your team's in it and it's like stressful as hell.
Luckily, I don't have to worry about that.
Right. All right. The week in review, Mike. Lots of interesting results this past weekend, and I think a very interesting week to come. Number one, Bama 34, A&M, the score is wrong, right?
It's up yeah, like 24-20.
Okay. Didn't see this coming by any stretch of the imagination. But again, if you're Bama, Georgia, right? If you're Nick Saban, don't you love this result where it's like you can tell your team they're crap and you're not as good as you think you are. And this team who's not very good almost beat you. Like, look, A&M, I know there's been a lot of talk about that last play call. I'm always reticent to question a play call because look, these guys are being paid a lot of money to do their job, and I'm sure they went through a lot of analysis to pick that specific play. It didn't look like the best play in the world to call in that situation.
No, I don't know who to blame. Whether I doubt that Jimbo called a play from the two where he said, "All right, you run to the one," and even if the ball is completed, we're going to gain a yard on the last play of the game and lose.
Right.
So you have to figure that the play called for the receiver to get in the end zone before the throw is executed. But a lot of credit to Texas A&M for the way they drove on that last drive, getting all the way down to the Bama 2. Texas A&M showed up. They played very, very well. Obviously, Alabama missed Bryce Young. Turnovers were a big issue for Alabama. But this was a fun game to watch.
Again, A&M is such an enigma, aren't they, Mike?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, they're just their quarterback king. He has such a bizarre throwing motion. It takes him like, you know, it seems like it takes him an hour just to get rid of the ball. which is not a good thing.
Are they the Sparty of the SEC?
They're better than Sparty, but you know what? Their record is 3-3. Right now Sparty would dream of being 3-3.
Georgia 42, Auburn 10. This game was interesting for a little while, right? Or no?
Well, this one was kind of predictable. You just had a feeling that after two sluggish weeks against a dysfunctional Auburn team, Georgia was really going to show up. It was 14-0 Georgia at halftime. They really separated themselves in the late third and fourth quarters, ended up covering by 4.5 points. But is it not a miracle that Harsin is still the coach at Auburn? What are they waiting for?
I think they can't afford to fire him. I think it's got to be something like that. And they're like trying to bank some money to pay for the new guy. They'll pay way too much for the next guy too.
Yeah, of course they will. They're Auburn. But yeah, this game, I didn't see a ton of it, but really seems like it was never in doubt.
Shout out, by the way, to noted listener, Dr. Tom Slattery, local Philadelphia radiologist, whose daughter now is down there at Georgia. I think he was down there for this game and had a great time. So hi, Tom.
Good one to go for. When you first said that, I thought you were said local noted Philadelphia area radio. I thought you were going to say personality.
Radiologist. Ohio State, number 3, Ohio State 49, Sparty 20. Again, Sparty hung around for a while. They're kind of a mess. I think Mel Tucker's post-game press conferences are not giving us the best sense of like confidence for Sparty going forward. I was talking to my dad today earlier. Shout out to my dad, by the way, who's got a little bit of a health issue right now. He'll be fine. But we were talking about the Michigan-Penn State game this coming weekend, and then he's like, yeah, I was not overly impressed with Michigan. It's Indiana. Like, they're beatable. He's like, I don't think Ohio State's beatable, and I generally agree. I don't think they're a perfect team. I don't think Bama, Georgia, or Ohio State are a perfect team or a vintage additions of each of those programs. But in the context of the Big Ten, Ohio State's just so clearly, it comes down to just like playmakers, and they have them.
They right? have them everywhere. Yeah, this game, they had 35 points at the half, and they were up 49-13. So it wasn't really even as close as the score indicated. Sparty is in shambles this year. This is what happens when you rely on the transfer portal. That's what they did last year. They turned their team around quickly, but it can come back and bite you in following seasons. But yeah, you get the feeling Ohio State is just in kind of autoplay mode right now. They're just putting up 40 plus points on everyone, waiting for their bigger games against Penn State and Michigan.
Speaking of Michigan, number 4, Michigan 31, Indiana 10. Mike, I'm sure you watched this game. What are your impressions?
I watched the whole game. This game was very similar to the next one we're going to talk about, which was Clemson-Boston College, which was 31-3, in that the upstart, well-coached, but talentless, generally, team, Indiana and Boston College, played tough in the first half. This game was tied at halftime at 10. But Michigan was very methodical in the second half on offense. They had a lot of long, long drives. They outscored the Hoosiers 21-0 in the second half. And J.J. McCarthy looked good. Their running game, of course, with Blake Corum, thrashed Indiana. And their defense really, really tightened the noose. So the first half, Michigan was, I think, a little predictably sleepy. It was another noon start. But they exerted their will really in the second half, which is really what Clemson did against BC also.
As someone who just watched a full Michigan game, what were your impressions of Michigan's strengths and weaknesses, Mike?
Their strength is their balance, I think, because they have a good offensive line. They can clearly run the ball, but they have a mobile quarterback with McCarthy. He makes the throws when he needs to. Now, they're not going to light it up like in Ohio State. They don't have really the playmakers at wide receiver like that Ohio State does. But they had a lot of sustained drives, and they have a very, very good, tough defense as well. So I think they're like kind of they're really a complete team on both sides of the ball. They're not as flashy as some of the other teams that we've seen around the country, but they're a complete team.
Number 5, Clemson 31, BC 3. I didn't see this game. Did you, Mike?
Yeah, I saw a lot of it. And as I said, it really, really mirrored the IU-Michigan game in that Clemson exerted its force and its talent difference in the second half. DJ is just playing great this year offensively for them. Their defense, after giving up all those yards and points to Wake Forest, seems to have settled down a little bit. So Clemson is looking good.
Number 8, Tennessee 40, LSU 13. I think LSU actually was ranked headed into this game. They had no right to be ranked. Tennessee, of course, is a huge game coming up this week. Look, he's done a great job there. He's done an amazing job. Tennessee is like, I'm not saying they what they were under Fulmer, because that was like different level stuff, but we've been saying it for weeks now. For me, as someone who's been to Knoxville for a game, it's very cool to see Tennessee back again. I think college football, it's a cliche to say, it's when these big programs that have always been good are back and on the like doing what they should be doing historically, it's good for the game. Tennessee and Penn State always rank, I think they're always like 8th and 9th in terms of total wins or whatever. Like they're very on par. I think there's a lot of similarities with the programs. So it's cool seeing Tennessee back.
Yeah, and this was, this is obviously not a marquee LSU team. They're in a bit of a transition, but I think this was a bit of a statement game for Tennessee to go down to Death Valley and hang 40 on that LSU team. I mean, this game was, LSU did not score until the fourth quarter, and they ended up, they did get a touchdown in the second quarter, but they were down big the whole game. The game was never in doubt. It was one of those weird 11 a.m. starts, which when LSU is not the LSU of old, maybe their fans are not quite as engaged as they would be for a night game or for one of their vintage seasons. But all credit to Tennessee. Very impressive result for them heading into the monster game this week.
I was like, I think LSU wore their sweet like home white uniforms.
They did. They had the white. They had the white helmets, which were really cool looking. And Tennessee wore their crappy, like I don't even know what color, gray uniforms. They should be in bright orange at all times.
Exactly. Number 18, UCLA 42. Our beloved number 11, Utah 32. I was a bit surprised by. I thought I was biased. Of course, we saw Utah last week.
We are biased. It's funny that we're biased for Utah.
I thought they'd muscle UCLA and look. Maybe UCLA under Chip Kelly has something this year, Brian.
Mike is my name, but thank you. Yeah, what an incredible win for UCLA. Back-to-back huge wins over Washington and Utah. I thought I could not see Utah giving up 42 points to UCLA. That was very, very surprising. But DTR played tremendously from what I read. I didn't see much of this game. DTR played great. And Cam Rising had some turnovers for Utah. As we said, we're kind of Utes fans now, but tip of the cap to Chip Kelly and that UCLA program. He's got them at 6-0, and they're rolling.
Speaking of teams we like, I was also disappointed here. Notre Dame 28, number 16, BYU 20. I was equally shocked by this one. I thought BYU would roll them. Notre Dame showing signs of life, I guess, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, they have this new quarterback who came in at the end of the first game, I guess, but he's been Drew, blanking on his last name, Payne, I think. he's really solidified their offense. Disappointing. I was hoping for a win from our Cougars, but this is not quite it doesn't seem like this is the BYU team that they've had the last couple years. They seem to be missing a little something in that big loss to Oregon and now a loss to Notre Dame. I really wish we were going to the BYU game this week, and so we could talk to some fans and some folks there in Provo about their takeaways from a game in Las Vegas.
Number 17, TCU 38, number 19, Kansas 31. Look, my thought going into this game in our pool, I definitely picked TCU. It's like Kansas is such a great story, right? And they could have still have a great, great season. I just thought, and the game day guys, they did call this out. One of the rare moments of being, actually analyzing football. They were on the set, and I guess like TCU had run by them, and then Kansas had. And the dude drives me crazy. What's his name? McAfee.
Yeah.
He called it the fact. He's like, yeah, TCU's a lot bigger than Kansas is. And you have to realize that Lance Leipold is still like very early in his like rebuilding of his Kansas team. He doesn't have the athletes, right?
Well, I mean, in defense of Kansas, Jalen Daniels left the game with an injury, and he's kind of their all everything on offense. But isn't it funny, when we were at the BYU game, we were noticing the stark difference in size between BYU and Utah State. How often can it just come down to their one team's dudes are bigger than the other team's dudes? That's
a great metric.
Astute record.
Total team weight should be a stat.
That would be a great stat. Astute observation by McAfee. I watched a lot of game day, and it was great being that it was in Lawrence. Lawrence, I've been there. It's really cool college town. The shenanigans on that show are starting to drive me crazy, but there's still nothing like it for making you feel like you're at the tailgate and you're getting ready for your own game.
Number 23, Mississippi State 40, Arkansas 17. Put Arkansas away. They are done this year, Mike. They're done.
Yeah, I think you're right. But also, again, they did not have their quarterback, KJ Jefferson, who accounts for so much of their offense. But yes, they're certainly coming back to earth. Tip of the cap, though, to Mike Leach and Mississippi State. They look like a contender, and they still have to play Alabama. And so that should be very interesting.
This one here for a reason. I want to touch on a topic. Illinois 9, Iowa 6. First of all, like, as a fan, you chuckle like, oh my God, 9-6, like an Iowa game or whatever. I saw the Spencer Petras post game interview. It's hard at this point not to feel bad for the kid. He knows he's being pilloried for being, and look, he played awful in this game again, right? There are greater ills with this team than just Spencer Petras. Kirk Ferentz has to own what he's doing to this offense. It's embarrassingly bad. They're embarrassingly bad on offense, and it's not just down to the quarterback. Could he be better? Yes. But I'm sorry. Scoring the way they're scoring, it's almost impossible to be that bad.
It is almost impossible to do that. You want to know what's really embarrassing is that my lock of the week was taking the over in this game. It was only 35, and they didn't even sniff it. I mean, it was bad. I watched as much of this game as I could stomach, but credit to Brett Bielema. You know, that team wins. They can win ugly. They can put some points on the board like they did against Wisconsin. They seem to be able to do whatever they need to do to get the win, except for against the Hoosiers.
This one to me, and I didn't see a lot of the game because again, it was like so far down the list, which speaks a lot too of like the current state of these teams. I think we all knew Oklahoma had some issues. Okay. But Texas is not exactly Alabama at this point either. But Texas 49, Oklahoma nothing. I'm racking my brain trying to think about an elite blue blood program falling this far so fast. And it's not a very long list, Mike. Seriously wrong, Oklahoma.
Yeah, well, they lost half their players to the transfer portal. They didn't have a starting quarterback. Dylan Gabriel was out, and they don't have a backup. Their backup, their quarterback, they had 38 yards passing in this game, 38. Oh. And the quarterback who started, I think he was a backup at Pitt last year. Now Oklahoma's starting a backup quarterback from Pitt. That tells you something that you need to know. That being said, Brent Venables is a defensive guy. And to give up 49 points, I had this game on one of my TVs, and I swear to God, every time I looked up, Texas had another 7 points. It was stunning. It's the biggest blowout in the 118-year history of the series. I can only imagine, you know, obviously they're not going to get rid of Brett Venables in the first year, but I think that this really does, they're so bad this year that it really shortens his leash for next year. I could see if they get off to a bad start again next year, I could see them, you know, cutting bait with him at that point. But this was a shocker, not in the result, not in that who won it. It was in the margin.
I mean, I have personally experienced fan whiplash where you go from like a top 10 program to all of a sudden you suck, and it's like, what the hell is going on? Okay, so 1999, Penn State was preseason number one in the country. They were stacked. Season ended like not great, but they ended like top 15. And then 4 of the next 5 years, they had losing records and they were impossible to watch. They were horrible to watch. You think like, what the hell happened? And I'm sure Oklahoma fans are feeling the same thing. Like the only word for it is whiplash. Like we are like what Kansas was at this point. It's bad.
Bad. Yeah. Well, Kansas plays Oklahoma this week. So we'll see who's superior among those teams. But the Penn State era you're talking about was kind of toward the end of Joe Pa, right?
It was mid-end.
Yeah, mid-end. It was a long end. That's right. It was a very long end for Joe Pa. Mid-end. at least Oklahoma has a new coach here. And I think he needs a little patience because they, like I said, they did lose so much to the transfer portal, and the style of football he's playing is so different from Lincoln Riley's. It's going to take some time to change things up there. But in the interim, 49-0, not a good look.
But to your point about like the narrative will start being like, oh, he could be let go next year because the powers that beat Oklahoma have no choice but to respond to donor pressure. Right.
And that's going to, could impact recruiting.
It opens the door too to the very simple, which could be true narrative, like, hey, Brent Venables was a long time assistant. Being a head coach is a whole different deal.
Yep.
So some people would be chirping about like, hey, maybe he's a good assistant, but not a head coach.
Right. No, definitely. That's a narrative. And you know, other coaches will be reminding recruits of the fact that he might not be there for a very long time.
And there'll be a coach we'll discuss in a couple minutes that could be in that mix there too, Mike. All right, top 25. I think last week we did the AP, so we'll do coaches this week, Mike. You ready for this?
Yeah.
All right. Drop from rankings, BYU, Washington, Arkansas.
We love you, BYU.
Receiving votes, BYU, Illinois, James Madison, Coastal Carolina. Maryland got 8 votes, Mike.
After a loss to Purdue. A heartbreaking loss.
And the next one down, Purdue with 7 votes. Love this. Washington State, 7 votes. Washington, 7 votes. The same voters, I'm sure.
the Washington contingent.
With 1 vote, San Jose State, Mike.
Interesting. And you said James Madison received some votes in the coaches poll. They are ranked 25th, I believe, in the AP poll in their first season. In high division one. So congratulations to the Dukes.
Here we go. 25 North Carolina, 24 Texas, 23 Baylor, 22 Kentucky, 21 Cincy.
Tough loss for Kentucky without their quarterback, Will Levis. They have a huge one this week coming up. Hopefully he can come back and play.
What are your thoughts on Will Levis, by the way?
On what?
On Will Levis.
Oh, he certainly plays with like a lot of energy, and he injects life into their offense. I don't know if he is the like NFL superstar that a lot of people are saying he's going to be, like a high first round pick.
I mean, I wish him the best. I don't think he is either, having watched him at Penn State for 3 years, but we shall see. 20 Kansas, 19 Utah, 18 Syracuse, hanging around, Mike. Syracuse,
yes, still undefeated, I believe.
17 Mississippi State, 16 Kansas State.
Mississippi State looks like a dangerous team to me.
I wouldn't want to play them. There'd be no fun.
Definitely Will Rogers at quarterback and Mike Leach with that. He's a comfort with Mike Leach's offense. It's a dangerous combination.
15 TCU, 14 Wake Forest, 13 NC State, 12 UCLA, 11 Oregon.
UCLA and Oregon exerting some Pac-12 might in the top 15. Very nice. I also think Wake is really a legit offensive team. Sam Hartman is great.
10 Penn State, 9 Ole Miss, 8 Tennessee, 7 Okie State, 6 USC, who's dangerous, I think.
Yeah, how about Oklahoma State? Far and away, the best team in the state of Oklahoma right now.
And then, of course, 5 Clemson, 4 Michigan, 3 Ohio State, 2 Georgia, 1 Bama. Bama with 35 first place votes, Georgia 18. Ohio State 10. At this point, again, to my point earlier, I think there is no difference between those three teams. I think they're the same.
Yeah, there's really nothing we can add right now until they play each other in the playoff. Those are the best teams.
And I think, the gap, not to say they couldn't be beaten, but the gap between those guys and the rest is notable, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The gap between the top three, huge. Then I think in tier two, you have like Michigan and Clemson. Then I think you have another gap, and then you have the rest of those teams.
I agree. Mike, so mostly said, Matt Rhule was fired as the coach of the Carolina Panthers this week, correct?
Correct.
And look, he's a very successful college coach, did a great job at Temple.
The beloved Owls.
Did a great job at Baylor. He's going to be a hot commodity on the coaching market. I think the prevailing thought, and I agree with it, there's not a better landing location based on the jobs he's gone to and succeeded at. Is there a better pick for Nebraska than Matt Rhule?
No, I was going to say that too, because By all indications, it seems like Wisconsin really wants Jim Leonard. So you take them out of the equation, and it looks like he would be, because he, the way he built Baylor, you would assume he could do something similar at Nebraska, right?
Yeah.
And he seems suited. He seems far more suited to the college game. I thought it was weird. I don't blame him. You know, you want to see if you can do it on the NFL level. You want to make a ton of bank. But in this day and age, I mean, Nebraska is going to be able to pay almost as much as an NFL team, if not more. So money is definitely not an issue for him. He's got tens of millions of dollars still coming to him from the Panthers. So I agree. I think he would be the perfect fit for Nebraska.
And we thought, of course, Scott Frost was. Yeah. But this is a different kind of thing. It's like he's proven himself at places. I mean, the work he did at Temple is, as you know, Mike, I'm very, I admire what he did at Temple. It's no joke.
With Temple.
Yeah. And talking about a tough place to win, Temple's top of the list.
Oh, yeah.
And Baylor's not easy either. People forget that. So anyway, it'll be very interesting. He's going to be like a top list for many, many people. Games of the week, Mike. You ready?
Let's do it.
Number 10, Penn State at number 5, Michigan, noon. Fox, I've said it before, I am so impressed with how Fox has turned a noon kick into a thing, and they really have. It's a cool, it is a go-to event, I think, in college football now.
And I think it's funny how, you know, Tennessee-Bama is a great game, no doubt about it. But game day was just in Knoxville about 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
This is almost like a waving of the white flag where they're like, all right, Fox, you can have, I assume Fox will be in Ann Arbor. And which pregame show would you watch? I'm definitely going to be tuned to the Fox game, the Fox one, because I'm more interested in that Penn State Michigan game. The Wolverines favored by 6.5 points. What's your analysis of what your Knits have to do to win this game? Coming off a bye, which I think is an underrated thing.
I thought a lot about this, Mike, as you might imagine, right? And the easy cop out, but I think it's the answer. It really comes down to Sean Clifford. If we have good Sean Clifford, we've got a great chance. If we don't, we don't. Penn State's strength, they're definitely defensively strong. We have, as I said before in the show, legit the best secondary we've ever had in my years and years of watching Penn State. So if Michigan can run the ball, they'll be in great shape. If they can't, they're not going to score.
I think the Michigan run game is huge because they've been running it all over all their opponents all season with Blake Corum and that offensive line. He's been racking up 200-yard games like it's nothing. So I agree. I think that if they really have to stop the run for Michigan. And I think if they do that, they can definitely be in a position to win. As you said, assuming Clifford doesn't, you know, poop the bed and throw a bunch of picks, which we all know is a possibility.
It really is. Number 19, Kansas at Oklahoma, noon, ESPN2. So this will be my number 2 game. I am fascinated. This is a classic coaching thing. And I think if Kansas goes there to Oklahoma and wins, the credit has to be given entirely to Lance Leipold, because I don't care the fact that Kansas is a better overall team than Oklahoma. You know for a fact, those Kansas kids look at Oklahoma as Oklahoma, right? They're coming off a loss. It is Lance Leipold's task this week to convince them they can beat this school that didn't recruit them, right? It comes down to whether those kids on Kansas, if they believe him, they will beat Oklahoma. If they don't, they won't. I think Kansas is better than Oklahoma as a team. And I think if Lance Leipold wins this game, his stock rises even further.
There's a lot of questions about this game, starting with the fact that both teams' starting quarterbacks are questionable for the game. So Dylan Gabriel for Oklahoma and Jalen Daniels for Kansas. Obviously, a lot will go into whether those guys can play or not. Number 2, this is an 11 a.m. kickoff in Norman. How do you think the stadium will be half filled? I mean, how many no-shows are going to be there to kind of express their displeasure with the way the Sooners played in the Red River rivalry?
I think that they're a very committed fan base. I think they're I'd put them top 10. I think they'll be there.
Well, also, you always talk about how important it is for the road team, the underdog, to get that first touchdown. If that happens here, then I think you're going to have a lot of belief in the Kansas players' minds and hearts, and a lot of fear in the Oklahoma team's minds and hearts. So that's going to be a fascinating game. I watched a lot of the KU TCU game last week. It was wildly entertaining, and both teams played really well, and it looked like two good teams. So a lot of people are saying Oklahoma is the worst team in the Big 12, and yet they are a 9-point favorite. Monster spread, in my opinion.
And that's, like, to me, it's like, that is just the public being stupid. They're not a good team. They're not.
Well, we'll see. I'm going to quote you on that. The public being stupid. I'm going to quote you on that.
The public is stupid, Mike. Let's face it, right?
The public is very stupid. I'm glad we're not part of the public.
Minnesota at number 24, Illinois, noon, BTN. A similar, not quite the same dynamic here. Minnesota, 2 weeks ago was like darling, right? They were. Yeah. And Illinois, and they're ranked 24, coming off beating an awful Iowa team. This, again, is my recurring line, Mike. College football is a confidence game. Which team here has more confidence coming into this game? I have to think it's Illinois. Even though they're not good, I'm leaning heavy Illinois here.
Interesting. And do you know that Minnesota is favored on the road by 6.5 points?
I'm not surprised at all, no.
Yeah, and they're coming off a bye, which is a very big advantage for them. They got to kind of regroup after that loss to Purdue, and we'll see whether they were all hype or not after this week.
This game, fascinating, right? Number 3, Bama at number 6, Tennessee, 3:30 CBS. Game day going back to Knoxville after being there, I think, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, 2 or 3 weeks ago.
This will be the most intense atmosphere at Tennessee in a long, long time. I am 100% confident that Bama will beat them by 30 points.
Oh, interesting. Because a lot of what I've heard among the college football talkers and yakkers this week has been how this game is essentially even. And they wouldn't be that Alabama's going to have to play its A game to beat Tennessee. Hendon Hooker is looking great. By the way, I heard he was 24. I just heard today he was 24 years old. He's older than a quarter of the NFL quarterbacks or something, which is wild. But anyway, Bama, a 7-point favorite on the road. Again, a lot of this is going to come down to whether Bryce Young plays. I think he will play. I think that he looked good to me on the side. Of course, I'm not a doctor or anything like that. He looked good to me on the sideline last week, and he was questionable. And then in the interview after the game, Saban said, hopefully we'll have our starting quarterback back, which I think was a wink and a nod to the fact that he's coming back. So if he plays, I'm taking Bama, but I don't think it'll be a blowout like you do.
Next up, another fascinating game, and I'm not assigning homework here because the next game is gonna be homework for our audience. Number 8, Oklahoma State at number 13, TCU, 3:30 on ABC. What a great game this is.
Yeah.
You seem pretty high in Okie State.
Yeah. I mean, TCU looked very good last week as well, but Oklahoma State, with their offense, with Spencer Sanders, has looked tremendous. Their defense is not as good as it was last year, but they seem to me to be a little bit more of a complete team at this point than TCU. But it should be a very good game. Oklahoma State road favorites, 3.5-point favorites on the road at TCU. This should be a good one.
TCU is definitely on my list of places to go see a game.
Yeah, but it seems like they have like a great little is there a stadium on campus? I believe it's like,
yeah,
and it's like 40,000, 45,000, something like that. And we've both been to Fort Worth and really had a great time there. So yeah, TCU would be a very, very fun trip.
The Mike Unger Bowl, one of the highlights of the year, Maryland at Indiana, 3:30 PM ESPN2. Mike, are you going to this game?
No, I will of course be in Boston and Cape Cod watching this game with our noted non-listener, Chris McBride. Heartbreaking loss for Maryland on Saturday against Purdue. Now, of course, you called it, you nailed it. Credit to you, tip the cap. The Terps came back in thrilling fashion, scored a touchdown with, I think it was like less than 30 seconds left, appeared to have converted the 2-point conversion to tie it. but there was an illegal man downfield penalty, so they had to redo the try from the 7, did not get it, ended up losing by 2. The game really turned in the third quarter, where Purdue had 3 straight turnovers in the third quarter. Maryland was unable to convert any of them into any points. So that was a tough, tough break for Maryland. Terps 4-2, IU 3-3. Pivotal game for both programs. Whoever loses their season is just going to spiral into a losing season probably. And whoever wins has a chance to make it to a bowl, which is what these basically two bottom feeders in the Eastern Division of the Big Ten are perpetually. So I'll be watching the over-under 61.5. I always take the over in this game just for fun because I want to root for both teams. So let's go offense.
Unranked LSU at unranked Florida, 7 p.m. ESPN, Mike. So like a will probably be a wonderful uniform matchup, right? Just great uniforms, but two really not great teams.
No, I have no idea what to make of this game. They're both 4-2. The Gators are a 3-point favorite, which means the odd makers see it as an even game. They're getting the 3 for being in the swamp. So no idea. This game has certainly lost a little luster from previous years.
Can I have a quick aside here, Mike?
Sure.
We both discussed that. I think that the whole Tom Petty, I won't back down thing at Florida is one of the coolest new traditions in college football, right?
Yeah, that and the wave at Iowa.
And I was not always the biggest Tom Petty fan, but as I've gotten older, I've like enjoyed him more and more.
Oh, I love Tom Petty.
And I may have shared this story with you, and I want to share with the audience because it's very important. Like, so I wouldn't say it's the most classic Tom Petty song, but I think the most classic Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers song is Refugee. I think it's like the most like the band song. Mm-hmm. Would you agree, Mike, or no?
Oh, that's, you can't put me on the spot to pick my favorite Tom Petty song right now. That's very, very difficult. Room at the Top of the World is an incredible song. Southern Accents is an incredible song. I love Tom Petty. I took it to another level. I'd seen him at Jazz Fest one year, but it was so packed. We were so far away. And then I saw him at the Baltimore Arena in July, about a month before he died. And it was just a spectacular, spectacular show. Literally every song was great. So I love Tom Petty, and that a trip to the swamp just to see that tradition. I think they do it in the third, between the third and the fourth quarters. Definitely,
I think
definitely high on my list.
So the point, it was like, it came up on my like shuffle this week on my drive home from whatever. And again, Refugee is an amazing song. And it called this amazing interview I heard on the Stern Show with Jimmy Iovine, who was a famous producer, produced Springsteen, Dr. Dre, Tom Petty, whatever. And he was talking about how he was producing Refugee. Okay. This great story about how they spent 6 weeks trying to get the recording right, and they just couldn't get it right. Okay. And the issue was the drumming. Jimmy Iovine didn't like Tom Petty's drummer. And then there was this guy who played in Eric Clapton's, he played in the Derek Dominoes band. It was in the studio across the hall. Hmm. And he heard them recording the song. He's like, you know what you need? And the Jimmy's like, what?
More like, cowbell.
No, literally almost the same thing. He's like, you need a shaker, like a little egg shaker.
Yes.
So they put the egg shaker in the song. And after 6 weeks, that fixed the problem. And I challenge you, Mike, play that song after this podcast and try not to hear the shaker.
I will do it. Song. I will do it. We should play it fading out on the podcast. See if you can work your producer magic. You're just as good a producer as Jimmy Iovine.
I will try. Because this is a great story. This is a famous.
It is. And Jimmy Iovine is a genius. That documentary on him and Dr. Dre on HBO was phenomenal. I highly encourage everyone to watch it.
Number 4, Clemson at Florida State, 7:30 p.m. ABC. I think Clemson is just like hanging around, right? They're hanging around. Any chance that Florida State puts up a fight here at a night game?
I have, for whatever reason, I can't really even articulate it. I have a little fear for Clemson for this game. The Noles should have beaten NC State last week. They were right there within field goal range, and they threw a very unfortunate interception. Jordan Travis has played pretty well, actually, this season. Clemson only favored by 3.5 on the road. I can't tell you why, but I just feel like this is going to be a tight game.
How do the compadres feel about it?
I think there's a growing sense of confidence with them, but
You know what's funny? They are just a fan. They're a fan base like any other. They're going to be nervous. They're going to be nervous about their team, even though their team is spectacular for the last decade. Really, kind of funny. But I think I'll describe it as a quiet confidence, a reserved confidence.
I'll say too, we have two wonderful late games here, or three actually, or four. Number 16 Mississippi State at number 20 Kentucky, 7:30 SEC Network. God knows what happens here. Again, Kentucky was riding high a couple weeks ago. All of a sudden, this is a huge game for them. Mississippi State can make a statement here. And then we have number 7 USC at number 20 Utah, 8 p.m. Fox. I love that game. Again, I think USC is legit awesome good, but you know Utah is going to be rocking for that game. This is kind of
we know it firsthand. First of all, let's go back to that Mississippi State Kentucky game. I erroneously said that the Bulldogs are undefeated. They're actually 5-1, so I apologize for that. They are 4.5-point favorites on the road. A lot of road favorites this week. A lot depends on whether Will Levis plays. And you are right. That Utah-USC game, you know, I almost wonder whether Utah had one eye ahead. I mean, granted, it was the undefeated UCLA team they were taking on next week. But you gotta think when the schedule came out, they circled that USC game. Both the fans did, the teams did, the players did, the coaches did. It is going to be an awesome atmosphere. And I love the fact that it'll be dark here when we turn this game on, and it'll still be nice and sunshiny when the sun will about to be set over the mountains there in Utah. It's going to be a great atmosphere. And I think I'm going to take Utah for the upset. Let me get you a spread on that one real quick. It looks like the Utes are favored. Wow, I won't call it an upset then. The Utes are favored by 3 in that game.
Wow.
Big, big. And Tim, let me say also, that last week was the first week, I think all season, where I watched football late, late into the night.
Yeah.
I watched a San Diego State-Hawaii game. I watched a Fresno State-Boise game. And I even managed to stay up for the first half of the Oregon State-Stanford game, which was an 11 Eastern kickoff. And I had to wave the white flag on that one at halftime with Stanford up, and they somehow blew it by a point. But those late games, we say it every week, let's attempt to stay up and watch those. They're so fun to watch those super late games on the East Coast. So I'll definitely be watching Utah USC, and I might even attempt to stay up for the end of Oregon State and Washington State.
Again, that USC Utah, it's such a spicy game. It's so interesting in so many ways. The line surprises me, though. That's
me too. Me too. Yeah. But that makes me think that Vegas thinks it's a tough matchup for USC.
Mike, our picks last week were what?
Tim, you had an ingenious pick. You took Purdue to cover over Maryland. They won it outright. And I had possibly the worst pick I've ever had on this podcast, taking the Illinois-Iowa over. And needless to say, I fell very, very short.
In the moment last week, I didn't question your pick, but like that was a very depressingly bad pick. Like
it was. And I, it's funny. You didn't question it, because I did the second I said it. And I will say this, and I hate when I do this, but I'm going to do it. The other pick I was debating between was Wisconsin over Northwestern -10. Of course, Wisconsin steamrolled Northwestern, who could be one of the worst teams. Well, they are one of the worst teams in the Power Five. They could be the worst. So. Should have gone with the Badgers, but I didn't. So we're both 2-4 on the season.
Bobby hit the bumper.
Place bets on college football.
Gambling is illegal at Bushwood, sir.
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
You're winning, sir.
Oh, thank you very much.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
The Mike Unger 50-50 possible lot probable loser of the week.
Please hang up and try again.
For this week's lock of the week, snicker, snicker, laugh, laugh, we are going to Austin, Texas, home of the resurgent Texas Longhorns. They got their quarterback, Quinn Ewers, back. They hung 49 on the Sooners. Their defense held Oklahoma to a shutout, first shutout against Oklahoma in over 20 years. So they're flying high. They are confident. They're thinking a lot about themselves. And who comes limping in but the unspoken about Iowa State Cyclones, coached by Matt Campbell. Tim, you always say that College football is a game of confidence and emotion. Emotion is the key here. This is a major letdown spot for Texas. Iowa State, 3-3. But they have a tough defense. They always play Texas well. And I just think that 17 points is too many. I'm taking Iowa State to cover against Texas.
It's a great pick, Mike.
Thank you. And it's a noon kickoff. I actually have a little bit of confidence on this one.
What's the Minnesota Illinois line?
Iowa beat him last week. Iowa State beat him last year. Minnesota is favored by 6.5 points on the road against Illinois.
I will still take Minnesota to cover.
Interesting. I thought you were going to go with Illinois since you just said how much confidence they're playing with, but you're laying nearly a touchdown on the road. Okay. What's your confidence level?
7.5.
Oh, very, very cocky.
Mike, so your weekend plans are different than mine. What are your weekend plans?
Yes, I will be heading up to New England, to the Boston area, to play some golf on Cape Cod and then watch football all Saturday with noted occasional listener Chris McBride and noted listener Brian Schlater. So we have a great guys weekend up there on Cape Cod, golf, seafood, brisket, football.
What's the weird seafood thing you're going to get up there? There's some kind of like weird seafood sandwich or something like that.
I'm unaware of that, but I will eat any seafood, so I don't think any of it is quote weird. Clams. They're definitely known for clams up there.
Yeah. Sounds lovely, Mike. I wish I could be there. I can't because of work and other stuff. Anyway, everyone, we are in the midst of the season. Is it week 7, Mike? Week 7?
It's week 7. Yep. Almost October 16th, the day I turned 47. Speaking of 7, my God.
Oh, Jesus.
I know. That sums it up.
All right, folks. Thanks again for listening. Please again give us positive reviews on Apple iTunes, follow us on Instagram, etc. And Mike, there's one thing to say.
Puchas.
Puchas.
Thank you for listening to the TCFA podcast. For more college football news and wins.